Yajatrana svarka sukava shishitam. Svistasya suktasya kritasya sovanam. Tena jana besmiti masjan manasya. Varse hari yad bhajatam santanti.
Varse hari yad bhajatam santanti.
Yadi.
Yadi.
If.
If.
Atra.
Atra.
In this heavenly planet.
Na.
Of us. Swarga sukha avasheshitam.
Whatever remains
after the enjoyment
of heavenly happiness.
Suistasya of a perfect sacrifice. Suuptasya
of diligently studying the Vedic literature.
Kritasya of having performed a kind of act. Sovanam,
the resultant actions.
Tena, by such a resultant actions. Ajanabe,
in the land of Bharadvarsa.
Smriti Majjanma,
a birth enabling one to remember the lotus feet of the Lord.
Naha, of us.
Shat,
let there be.
Varse,
in the land.
Hari,
the Supreme Personality of God.
Yad,
wherein.
Bhajatam,
of the devotees.
Santanati,
expands the consciousness.
Translation:
we are now living in the heavenly planets, undoubtedly as a result of our having performed ritualistic ceremonies, pious activities and yajnas, and having studied the Vedas. However, our lives here will one day be finished. We pray that at that time, if any merit remains from our pious activities, we may take again birth in Bharatvarsa as human beings, able to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord is so kind that He personally comes to the land of Bharatvarsa and expands the good fortune of His people. Good Lord. It is certainly as a result of pious activity that one takes birth in the heavenly planets. But from these planets, one must nevertheless come down again to earth, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Ksine Punya Marcha Lokam Vishanti. Even the demigods must return to earth to work like ordinary men when the results of their pious activities expire. Nevertheless, the demigods desire to come to the land of Bharatvarsa. Even a small portion of the merits of their pious activities remains. In other words, to take birth in Bharatvarsa, one must perform more pious activities than the demigods. In Bharatvarsa, one is naturally Krishna conscious, and if one further cultivates his Krishna consciousness by the grace of Krishna, he certainly expands his good fortune by becoming perfect in Krishna consciousness, and very easily going back home, back to Godhead. In many other places in the Vedic literature, it is found that even the demigods want to come to this land of Bharatvarsa. A foolish person may desire to be promoted to the heavenly planets as a result of his pious activities, but even the demigods from the heavenly planets want to come to Bharatvarsa and achieve bodies that may be very easily used to cultivate Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu repeatedly says, Bharata Bhumite Vardham Manushya Janma Jara Janma Sartika Kari Kara Upakara. A human being born in the land of Bharatvarsa has the special prerogative to develop Krishna consciousness. Therefore, those already born in Bharatvarsa should take lessons from the Shastras and Guru and should fully take advantage of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to be fully equipped with Krishna consciousness. By taking full advantage of Krishna consciousness,
one goes back home, back to Godhead. Yanti Madhya Jinam Pima. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore spreading this facility to human society by opening many, many centers all over the world so that people may associate with the pure devotees of the Krishna consciousness movement, understand the science of Krishna consciousness, and ultimately go back home, back to God. The one sentence in the purport that stood out for me was where Srila Prabhupada said that in order to take one's birth in Bharatvarsa, one must perform more pious activities than to take birth in the heavenly planets. And that's something I would highlight, because that is extraordinary. This Bharata Bhumi Day, Vailo, is the most quoted verse by Srila Prabhupada. There's this little verse, he quoted as many times as this verse. When we are looking at this land of Bharat, we are looking at it with great expectation and sometimes with mixed feelings. We're seeing that sometimes we see the most exalted cultural things, and other times we also see so much ignorance, so much neglect, and so on. And we are surprised. We didn't expect that in such a place. But Srila Prabhupada said that India will be the best and the worst in both respects, and in the age of Kali, and we see that also in some ways. But those are only external manifestations. When we look on a deeper level, when we look beyond the weakness of Kali Yuga that is now also strongly present in the land of Bharat, when we are looking beyond degraded behavior, just think of rape, right? And everything that goes on under that banner, it's extreme things that go on. Organ stealing, it's just inconceivable what's going on in terms of things like that. Child labor in factories. So just to name some things that one could bring up from a social point of view and then say, well, Bharat, you know. I mean, I'll tell you something about Bharat, one could say. But we will not do that. I already did it, but we are not making that the focus of our discussion. Rather, we will focus on something else. And that is on the actual culture of Bharat, not the degradation of the culture due to the influence of Kali, or the reflection of Western culture taken in through MTV and whatever other sources. Leaving that aside, going back to the original culture, let us for a moment look at Sanskrit, which is very much the root of Indian languages. Of course, we are having Indo-Germanic languages all over the world, and there are traces of Sanskrit also, even in English, but English is still a language which is become much more basic than Sanskrit. Here you can have half an hour, one syllable conversation. Hey man, how are you? Where you go, what you do, what you think, what you say. So far, all one syllables. Try that in Sanskrit, that's impossible. Complex structures which are
compound words which are designed to express a refined sentiment. Because Sanskrit, Devanagari, is not just spoken on earth. It is spoken not only in the heavenly planets, but even spoken in Vaikuntha. So this is the interesting part, that we see that some of the culture of the spiritual world is reflected in Bharatvarsa. And that makes it an amazing place. We cannot say that these are simply Indian clothes. We can't say. I mean, I'm not here on a high horse, addressing Krishna West or something. You know, it's okay with me, no problem. But the dress of the residents of the spiritual world is the same as the original dress of Bharat. There may be in Vaikuntha more opulence and so on. But we recall that in the Krishna book, there's that story where Nanda Maharaj went to take his bath after the Ekadasi, went into the river too early in the morning, was arrested by the servants of Varuna, brought before Varuna. Nanda Maharaj was shocked. Seeing Varuna, I mean, it's not the thing you expect to happen in your life, but it did. He saw Varuna face to face. So he was stunned. Varuna is not just seated on a throne, but dressed in so many jewels because the ocean is filled with all kinds of opulence. So Varuna is undoubtedly an outstanding personality. You can't mistake him. It's not someone in a cheap costume dressed up like Varuna. No. This was Varuna. There was no doubt about it. The real thing. So Nanda Maharaj stood there in awe. Meanwhile, in Vrindavan, alarm, alarm, alarm. Nanda Maharaj has disappeared into the Yamuna. Everyone, Krishna quickly comes running, ties his dhoti, and just jumps in the Yamuna as well. Meanwhile, everyone is standing there, oh my God, what's going on? And they're not coming back, because they're down there with Varuna. And Varuna, he falls flat on the ground, comes off his throne, pays full obeisances, says, finally, after so many lives, this life has become successful. Then, he's offering his prayers, and Krishna says, yes, it's very good, Varuna, but, he says, finally, this life has become successful because in this life I'm getting the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So at that point, in Nanda Maharaj's mind, the penny drops and he stands there. Varuna, demigod, authority, Krishna, Varuna, offering obeisances, Varuna saying to Krishna, finally, this life successful. Finally, one second. This life, darshan of Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Nanda Maharaj is sort of slowly registering it all. Krishna, my son, Varuna says, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Meanwhile, Krishna gets into action. Sorry, Varuna, it's really nice to be here, but it's really time we gotta go because people are waiting in great anxiety up there. Grabs Nanda Maharaj, comes out of the river, and everyone is saved, relieved, and so on. And then Nanda Maharaj tells everything. Varuna, Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, really. Well, Krishna, all this time you've never told us. You are the Supreme Lord. Anyway, now you'll have to show us something.
So Krishna said, what do you want? He said, show us the Brahma Jyoti. Krishna said, no, that's too boring. You know what I'll show you? I'll show you Golok. He said, oh, Golok, yes. Show us Golok. So Krishna shows Golok. And as he shows Golok Vrindavan, there they see that it's exactly the same as their village. Same. It's basically, but there are these effulgent personalities that they just personify, just to show that he's really showing something, he's not just sort of bluffing. No, but for the rest, it's the same. And actually, when they see that it is the same, it's very satisfying. They really like it. Ah, yes, that's nice. That is very nice. So, that Golok was the same as the Vrindavan that Krishna was manifesting on earth. But in Golok, there were the Vedas personified. Okay, then everyone knows now Krishna is Golok, and therefore they stop talking about it. After a while, someone says, have you heard? Krishna is God. Yeah, old hat. You have something else to say. So therefore, no one talks about it anymore. And therefore, everyone forgets. That was the one time that the residents of Vrindavan knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God. It's one of my favorite stories. And really, but this time I'm using it to establish my main point. And the main point being that actually the spiritual world is reflected in this realm. And that there's no difference between Golok Vrindavan and Boma Vrindavan. And we see that the culture on earth is reflecting that Boma Vrindavan. Once upon a time, all over earth, there were Buddha carts. Even here in the United States of America, Buddha carts were a means of transport and so on. Just like at the time of Krishna. In India, we still see, sometimes, we see a cowherd boy walking with some cows and buffaloes going into a river. And the cowherd boy is standing on the back of the buffalo in the river and he has a flute. And it's not like, you know, your mind just takes you to Vrindavan and you just think, this is how Krishna did it. This is how he crossed the Yamuna. It is so present everywhere, so still so visible. So in this way, Bharatvarsa, there is still so much there, and still so much is there in the culture. Although Prabhupada said Vedic culture is like an elephant, and this elephant has died. It has died, he said. The true spirit is gone, but still so much is there. Still every Indian kid, the parents push the kid with a coin towards the donations box, right? And they put it in.
Hello. Put.
Or the kid sees the Swami and they say, Jai Karo. And the kid has to do it. There's no question of not offering respect. Right? I mean, respect? Right? What is that? I don't know here, but I know I took a low birth below the sea level, actually. And there, respect is not so much,
what makes you any more than me?
Yeah. We're all equal, you know what I mean? Get off your high horse, man. You know what I mean? Everybody's equal, man. Don't think you're any better than anybody else. You got it. You know. That kind of, and that's considered enlightenment, right? That's real knowledge, you know. Now we have, this and above, this false society of classes where one is placed above the other, you know. No? Who do you think you are? Yeah. So different. So that culture is still in place, even
even if it is confused. I have seen in Bengal something like a religious procession, little girls in front with plates with some little grains on it and a flame nicely walking in front. Behind that, people in some procession beating drums, right? And then a cart with a big picture of Karl Marx on it. I have seen such processions in Bengal. And it's very interesting. And I also know that when Mickey Mouse first came to America, that he was received with arete. Seriously. They had a personality in a Mickey Mouse costume. And I lived in India at that time, and I read it in the Times of India. He arrived, and they offered arete. Now, I am not trying to put down India in this, you know. I'm rather putting India up. I said, despite of Kali Yuga, no matter how much Kali Yuga comes in, right, no matter how much Vedic culture is being murdered, is being destroyed, it just doesn't die. It just bounces back up. And still we do puja to Mickey Mouse or to Karl Marx or whatever. Because this tendency is so deep. And of course there are many people who still understand. There still are many Vaishnavas. There are still many who actually appreciate who is the Supreme Lord. In a census, it said that 31% of India is still vegetarian. It said of the Brahmins, still 55% vegetarian. Okay, it's not as good as it used to be. I remember the days that on every railway station there were two canteens, always two, one pure vegetarian and the other one was non-veg. But even the fact that people say non-veg, right? Even that non-veg is an indication that the knowledge isn't dead yet. No one eats meat in India. No one. Some eat non-veg. No one eats meat. See? So, just see how this culture exists in so many ways. And it is just, Prabhupada said, like dry grass. So easily reignited. Prabhupada said, devotees of Krishna, who've turned their back to Krishna. We did Harinam on Connaught Circus and in Delhi, which is like, and the people were looking at us like, do you have to do this here? Do you really have to do this here? Can't you see you're trying to forget all these things, you know, for once? And then you're coming here. We sort of, it's not that through thick layers of ignorance, through millennia of forgetfulness, through really like no sense of what's the standard, of what's right, what is wrong, that in the thick of all that, Krishna consciousness appears and slowly penetrates. No, in ignorance, in India, or in Bharat, it is just unwillingness, a little bit of rebelliousness. Just like rebellious children, right? Who just don't want to do what their parents wanted to do. Just rebel a little bit against Vedic culture. But how much is still there ingrained in people, in society? So much, actually. That still, we see Bhagavad Gita, all the temples in India in December, like 130,000 Gitas in 1 month, another temple, that's 150,000 Gitas. If you do 70,000 Gitas, everyone, it wasn't a very good network, was it? 70,000 Gitas, I mean, in New York, imagine. And we would be like, over the moon, right?
one person comes to the temple, here we think, you know, wow, someone came. No, really. 10 people came. Wow. 100 people come. Wow. 100 people came. 100 people came. Yes. You sneeze and there's thousands. Yeah. 10,000s. There's just endless throngs of people. And I decided to go to the Kumbh Mela in Haridwar. The Kumbh Mela happens in different places. It's different constellations. That drop of nectar is falling from the sky in a particular location. So sometimes in Haridwar also. So I decided to go to Haridwar. And it was an overnight bus ride. So we're on this old bus. Terrible suspension, absolutely horrible. And there's a seat, and it has an iron bar in front of you. You can hold your hands, but you can also, when it goes off, knock your head on it. It's just, I don't know how many times I hit my head on a bar. The windows never close, right? They don't close. There's ice cold air blowing in at night. It's freezing, you know. And it's like, and we're sitting there in the bus, right? Coming from the west, you think, oh my God, you know, what am I doing in this bus? Why did I want to go to the Kumbh Mela anyway? Then you come in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock. There is police on the road. They stop the bus. We all wake up. And they start beating the bus with bamboo sticks as if it is cattle, you know. Beat the bus as if it's an animal, right? Anyway, they're beating the bus. And they say, there you go, right? You're not going any further. Stop here. You know? And they tell us that we have to park the bus in the middle of the field at the park. We don't know where we are, right? It's a park. Anyway, it can't kill the spirits, you know, no problem. All the people get off the bus, and all the people, we start walking to Haridwar, right? And we're walking, and then sort of after about 15, 20 minutes walking, sort of people start talking and say, does somebody actually know where we're going? No, not really. I mean, where is Haridwar? Nobody knows. And we're just walking, and we turn around, and we go in the other direction, and this and that. And it's just total chaos, right? I mean, total. And then finally, after I don't know how long, you know, it's about 6 in the morning, we come at the outskirts of Haridwar. 3 hours we've now been walking throughout the night, you know. And my mind by then is like, and we're walking, and we come to the city, and again, police with lattes, with bamboo sticks, hurting us this time, as if we are cattle. Okay, we're walking, we're being beaten, we finally get to the Ganga. We get to the Ganga. The people from the bus get now totally ecstatic, you know, Ganga Maya, and they all start to glorify Ganga Maya. And they get ready, they take their clothes off, it's freezing cold, freezing. I sort of first put my finger in the water, sort of like, God, this is just ice cold. Shoot, it's ice cold. Maybe I should just wait till the sun comes up, right? But not my fellow passengers, you know, that's Ganga Maya, you know? I mean, Ganga Maya. deadly cold, but old people, right? Bony, crooked, you know, like bend over, no fear whatsoever. Plunge into that water, right? Okay, after I see all that eagerness, I think I can't stay behind. I also go in there. I bounce straight back out, like a ball, you know. In and just fly back out. Okay, I did my religious principle. I went in the Ganga. Meanwhile, all my fellow passengers are in the water. It's like, the mercy. I got the sweet mercy. So I'm sitting there, still freezing from that quick dip on the bank of the Ganga,
thinking, okay, I wonder where the camp of the devotees would be. I didn't sleep all night in that bus. Right? Maybe it's sort of find where I'm going to stay. You know? And there is a tent reserved for me, and possibly I could even sneak in there and take a little nap before the whole thing starts, because I was finished.
Right? So, okay, asking around, you know, and eventually we have to cross the river with a boat, we get there on the other side, finally come to the place where all the camps are, and eventually find the camp. But those people that came on the bus, they didn't have a tent, they didn't have nothing, they had no place to stay. And what happened was they went straight to the pango, straight into the program. Right there, you know, and it's like the katar is going on, the kirtans and other people with great eagerness were in there. And it went on till late at night, and at night, at often way after midnight, and the loudspeakers blasting, right? In the middle, you know, one mantra, every mantra in the book is echoing around. They're all together in a cacophony of sound, and all this is going on, and those people. Right? They just lie down in the same pango where there was the program and sleep there just under a little chadar, right? And the mosquitoes are everywhere. I've got my nice camping bed and my mosquito net well set up and quite comfy. And someone says, Maharaj, would you like some masada? And Maharaj says, well, why not? In this way, what can I say? Koti dandavats, you know, koti dandavats. I'm offering unlimited obeisances to these great pious souls of Bharatvarsa, in whom Krishna consciousness naturally lingers, even although it may be covered, distracted by Kali Yuga. But it's just so easily ignited. And when it gets ignited, it's just something extraordinary. Oh, that's all I can say. Thank you so much. I have 2 minutes for a comment.
Sometimes you get caught up seeing external things you see in India when you go there. So how we can rise above this external atmosphere where...
When you are in India, you are not only seeing things, you're smelling things that you've never smelled before and that you hope to never smell again. You hear sounds that attack your eardrums with so much aggression that you pray, oh my Lord, save me, save me. You have to breathe smoke, you know. They talk about secondary smoking. My God, you know, like the fumes that enter your lungs into India, the germs that are everywhere. Tell me all about it. You know, I lived there for like so many years. Oh, gosh. Yes. Those things sometimes get the better of us. And there are people, you know, who just get the India blues and the Westerners, and they can't take it any longer. Right? And I want a supermarket, you know, just, you know, I just want a shower that works, you know, and the rest, right? Peace and quiet, you know, even the sirens of New York are like music compared to the things you hear in India. But then suddenly in the middle again,
yes.
There are temples, then there are devotees, then the eagerness is there in the people. What can we say? So sometimes it's a love-hate. But what we hate is Kali Yuga. That is what we hate. And what we love is the spiritual culture.
that has its origin in the spiritual world that reflects to India. And that love is something, you know, so wonderful that we'll always go back there, despite all the dust, despite the bumpy roads. I went in Vrindavan to this Parikrama, and, you know, to the place where Krishna stole the clothes of the Gopis. Yeah. And, yeah, I know that. But then, on the way, there is this village which reminds you of a river of stool. There's a literal river of stool. And you can't, it's like you got to drive through there, and the smell, and you can't, oh, do we really have to go here? Yes, we do have to go through here. And like you can see, Krishna arranges these things to shy away, to scare away those, you know, who are not qualified to go to that sacred of most sacred places. Let me see. Perfect terrain. The Gundas. The everything, you know, all the Gundagiri. Yes. You know. Stay humble, stay low. Don't flash wealth. Just be austere and simple. You'll have to be, or the Gundas will come and take it away. In this way, it's all Krishna's arrangement to actually bring us there to the point where we see the culture of the spiritual world right there in that land of Bharatvarsa. What a relief. Even when we go to Delhi, oh, already Delhi, you know, oh, Delhi, so much culture. What to speak of Vrindavan? Oh, Vrindavan. And then the villages in Vrindavan. There, these villages, there sometimes we can feel, we can really feel that we are in the spiritual world. Thank you.
Sorry to take too much time.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Vrindavan ki jai.